The Mariners' week that was on 710 took a big left turn a few hours ago, and that certainly is good news. What do you know? We got a little something extra this week. Shannon Dreher here, bringing you everything Mariners you might have missed on the station this week and the first move of the offseason to talk about as well. We'll get into that in just a few. A different week, short because of the holiday, but all sorts of Mariners on the airwaves this week, Monday through Wednesday. In addition to some of the conversations with the host, we're going to hear from Logan Gilbert, Ty France, and Chris Flexen, who all took time out of their schedules to visit with us. We also have John Morosi in his weekly visit with Wyman and Bob, and he gets into the market for Marcus Semien, among other topics. Because of the holiday, we did not have the Jerry DePoto show this week, but with the move Saturday morning, Jerry did talk with the media, and I'm going to include that audio as well. Good stuff to get to there as the Mariners add Adam Frazier, a move that, from what DePoto was saying, should open the doors to more. All of that coming up. Right now, let's take it back to Monday when Jake and Stacy caught up with Logan Gilbert.
You know who we're really excited to see this year is Logan Gilbert. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Logan, what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. We're really, really excited to talk to you. Speaking of, how excited are you just to get this upcoming season underway, given how you guys finished last year?
I'm so excited. Yeah, especially with how we ended. We had a great season, and it was such a long season and finally came to an end, but I felt like a lot of us are already ready to get back out there and start the next one.
You know, Logan, one of the things that just was so fascinating to me watching you through the season was the fact that it wasn't just you getting that experience. It was also the fact that you were tweaking some things and trying to get better and trying to work on the shape of your pitches and trying to make your delivery the same. How challenging was that, trying to do all of that crunched into one? And how excited are you to, you know, really build off of that this offseason?
Right. Yeah. Like you said, it was difficult and challenging. And I think just a major league season by itself is going to be challenging enough, and trying to adjust on the fly and all those things in the first year that you don't really know what to expect going into it, and try to just figure it out along the way. And now that I have a little downtime and a chance to take a breath, I'll try to continue to work on those things here in the off season and get it as refined as possible. And hopefully next year, I'll have a little better idea of what to expect and just take it all into next year and go from there.
What else are you working on in the offseason? I mean, there's one thing, you know, you talked about kind of mentality and kind of how to approach the game. Anything with the pitch arsenal? I mean, anything you're working on in particular?
Nothing crazy right now. I think just the consistency of everything, especially the off-speed pitches. Not trying to do anything too crazy, really, except just making all my pitches work together and blend together, trying to make it harder for the hitters to tell what pitch is coming if everything comes out like a fastball. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Well, Logan, you have already gotten off to a pretty serious offseason here with some big moves being made, one being that you proposed.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Walk us through that. I mean, that's a big moment, man.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're so excited about it. My fiance Avalee was working in Michigan, and I went up there to visit her. And, you know, I really wasn't too nervous leading up to it the whole day. I thought, you know, now that I pitched in front of big stadiums, big crowds, all that stuff, I kind of got it down. And then I actually pulled out the ring, and this thing was happening, and then everything hit me all at once and got nervous and all that. So I was trying to remember what I planned to say as best as I could. I don't even remember, honestly, but thankfully she said yes and everything worked out. So we're really excited about that.
Well, congratulations to the two of you. I love the idea that, like, look, I can face the Yankees lineup, no problem, but man, getting on one knee, I was sweating.
Yeah,
heart was beating.
Yeah. I didn't know what to expect. I thought it'd be easier, but turns out I was still nervous. But like I said, she said yes, so that's all that matters.
Jake, I imagine you were also pretty nervous. That's got to be a nerve-wracking moment.
Yes. Well, for me, I don't know about you, Logan, but like when you get to that point, it was just like kind of shaking as you're getting down on the knee, and then, you know,
don't drop the ring.
Yeah, trying to fumble through the words. But Logan, as you went through that, did you set it up with, hey, is this like sentimental to, you know, our story and us? Or was it just, you know, hey, I'm going to take her to a great place, a great location? You know, what was kind of the thought process behind the proposal there?
Yeah, so she grew up going to this island she was working on. So it was really special to her, that location. And I wanted to go up there and see her and propose before she came back to Florida. So her parents also got proposed or got engaged very close to where I proposed on that island. So there's a lot of sentimental value to not only her, but her entire family. So I think it was the right spot to do it.
Nice. Well done. Well done. I applaud that. That's awesome, man. We're super excited for you. Congratulations to you both. So now as you head into this next, you know, aspect of the season here, Logan, what is everybody's mindset that you can feel from? You know, have you talked to a lot of the guys, you know, so far this off season?
I haven't heard much, honestly. I keep up with Jared a little bit, especially being roommates there, like we were last season. And, you know, everybody's just so excited, honestly. I think we saw a glimpse of it last year, especially with where we finished and how we ended the season. And, you know, people are starting to notice that I think we have what it takes, and we're right on the edge of the playoffs. And I think it's only going to get better in the years to come, especially with some more of the big guys coming up from the minors. So I'm really excited about the future and think we have a really good shot to do this thing.
What do you think of, I'm assuming either you read Mitch Haniger's article in the Players Tribune or you've just heard him as a leader in that clubhouse talk about it, but what do you make of a leader on your team kind of having that kind of a message, basically saying, hey, watch out, MLB, like we're hungry and we're ready to make a run?
Yeah, I did. I got a chance to read it, and that's just who Mitch is and who he's been as long as I've been around him, from what I can tell. He's just a leader. That's who he is. He's the kind of guy you want on your team and you want to follow, honestly. So I think he hit the nail on the head. It was perfect, everything he said, and I think that's the attitude that a lot of us have in the locker room. So it's going to be exciting to go into next season and really fight for this thing and make a run.
You know, you kind of took the words out of my mouth. I was going to ask if you share that same mentality of like what your mentality is as far as looking around the rest of MLB and kind of thinking, you know, we're ready to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, just a little different because I didn't know a lot of what it's like in the MLB. So I had to experience it this first season to see. And of course, there's so many good teams out there and so many good players. But now that I have a little bit of experience, I can kind of look around and then look at our clubhouse and say, you know, exactly what Mitch said is right. We do have the pieces. We do have the team that it seems like it takes to get to the playoffs and win a lot of games in the playoffs. So I'm right there with him. I agree with everything he said.
So now, I mean, Logan, as you guys, you mentioned some of the younger guys that have the opportunity to come up. You know, is there any teammates that you have had, you know, down in the minor leagues that you're just like, I cannot wait to be teammates with this guy again at the big league level?
Yeah, absolutely. The first guy is Julio. That's the first guy that comes to mind when you say that. He's just an awesome guy. I mean, exactly what you guys see and hear in interviews and all that kind of stuff. That's who he is as a person. He gets everybody excited around him, the kind of guy you want to play with, and he hypes you up, and you can tell that he believes in you, all that kind of stuff. So he's obviously amazing as a baseball player, but I'd say an even better teammate. So really excited for him to join the team this year.
I was going to say, is there any warning, right? Like, Logan, you got to help us out here. Is there anyone that's going to be really sarcastic, give us a hard time, where you're like, that guy's hilarious, he will not make it easy on you?
I don't know. Everybody's pretty good when it comes to that. So I don't think there's too many characters or anything like that. I was roommates with Emerson in spring training, and once he opens up, he's pretty funny. He's got a little attitude in a good way, like a funny way.
I think
Emerson's got a little personality.
We'll be on the lookout there.
Yeah.
Well, Logan, thanks so much, man. I mean, you know, this has been really fun, and we are so excited to see you back on the mound again. You know, it has been really fun to watch you, you know, grow and develop over this year, and really excited to see what you can do here in year two, you know, putting everything together. I mean, you know, Logan, one of the things that I was curious about is that as you went on, what was the feeling like for you going from, you know, hey, maybe your first couple starts to what you felt like by the end of the season?
This season was kind of crazy. You know, a lot of ups and downs, and Once I got past the first few starts, I felt like I started to settle in a little bit and see myself have success. And then that leads to you just believing in yourself even more, believing in your pitches even more. And then had another rough stretch later in the year, but then kind of got past that and then finished pretty strong. So I think it's just seeing that, I was confident, believe in my stuff, but when you start to see yourself have a little bit of success, then it starts to build on top of that. So I think it's nice just to have that experience, all the experience, the good and the bad, and kind of take that and build from it into next year.
All right, Logan. Well, best of luck to you guys this year, and we're excited to hopefully get another chance to talk to you a bit later this offseason. But until then, again, congratulations on your engagement. That's awesome news, man.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's great talking to you guys.
An eventful offseason already for Logan, who was so fun to watch this season. The thing that really jumped out at me, and I think you can hear it in that interview, he's really not overwhelmed by any situation. There's a lot of confidence there. He seems to believe he is going to get to where he wants to be, understands the process, really doesn't force anything. You know, in short, he's kind of allowed for all that comes with being a rookie. You know, where we saw Jared Kelnick really press when he first came up, Gilbert had a different approach. And I think we saw big steps taken forward as he learned more about what he does at the major league level. I think we eventually saw that with Kelnick as well, especially in September. He seemed to be so much more in control of his game at the plate and what was going to happen for better or for worse in different situations. He acknowledged he wasn't going to win every battle and I think settled down quite a bit. Perhaps his roommate Logan was a good influence. I think I'll go ahead and tuck that away for a spring training question. Moving right along, on Jake and Stacy, if you've been following along, Jake in particular, well, let's just say he really needs to see a move.
Are you upset, worried, disappointed, or completely fine with the fact that the Mariners have not made a move in free agency?
Oh, I'm completely fine, okay? I'm completely fine about it, but let me preface that with my anxiety is through the roof. I don't know how.
In general.
In general. About the Mariners. No. About the Mariners. I just don't want to see them have an opportunity pass them by. And particularly when it comes to Marcus Semien, because there was that report out there from Jeff Passan that said, look, the two, you know, superstar players that I'm hearing that want to sign or that could potentially sign before the, you know, CBA or
before the lockout
starts is Marcus Semien and Corey Seager. And Marcus Semien obviously is number one target for the Mariners here. And so I am waiting on pins and needles to hear that conversation really start to fire up and to get heated. So far that has not happened. But when you start to see these other moves, it's not the individuals that are signing elsewhere that I'm looking at and going, how are the Mariners passing that up? Mm-hmm. What are they doing? It's just more of that consistent, the restlessness and going, okay, are they going to make a move? Are they going to get left, you know, standing there? Are they going to be the only ones on the block after everybody else, you know, leaves? I mean, I don't want them to be in that position because obviously this offseason is so incredibly important and you want to see them make a statement. You want to see them make a statement before this lockout. And Stacey, reason why? Is, yeah, it gives us incredible content.
Number one, me. My
selfishness.
Job becomes easier.
Yeah.
And right. Number two.
No doubt. But
the
team could use it. And when it comes to the recruiting pitch and when it comes to making a statement around Major League Baseball and who are the Mariners and what are they trying to be and who are they becoming, man, that makes a huge statement. And when you're talking about recruiting pitches to other, you know, top Major League free agents, when you look at that and say, yeah, no, we're serious. It's not just talk for us. This is who we got. I mean, I have to imagine that speaks to something.
From Joe Doyle at Joe Doyle MILB the other day, he said, and I've seen conflicting reports about the Dodgers in this one who may not, I don't know. But at this point, this is the list of teams he has linked at some point to Marcus Semien: Yankees, Rangers, Dodgers, Giants, Blue Jays, White Sox, Cubs, Tigers, Astros, and Mariners. He says it's an immense market, obviously.
Cool.
A third of the league.
Cool.
Well, I think that's why the nerves are there, right?
In a bidding war, yeah.
I don't think it's like it's not quite an all your eggs in one basket situation for Semien, but it does become close to that when you say we're not moving JP from short.
Right. Absolutely. It definitely narrows down the list for you. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, when it comes down to Marcus Semien and the idea of overpaying or the idea of having to extend past a deal that you would initially walk into the room and feel comfortable with, well, guess what, Mariners? You're going to have to be the one that steps up. So if the deals are all very similar across the board, the only way that Marcus Semien is going to pick the Seattle Mariners is if they go out and add the extra year or they go out and add the extra money on top of that. And are you going to be mad at that? DJ, are you going to be mad at that? Stacey, are you going to be mad at that?
If they go out and add additional?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Do you just say, get the deal done no matter what?
Oh, man, it's not my money.
But let's not even talk about money, because I think we all would feel comfortable about the money. What about years? He's 31 years old.
I think it's weird that I can't tell if it's completely acceptable. Like, I'd be interested to ask like Jason Churchill, like, is it weird for a 31-year-old to just fully expect he'll get a 7-year deal?
I mean,
I don't think Jerry DePoto would want to give a 7-year deal.
But he might have to. Does he walk away?
But the thing is, who is he competing with? How many other teams are offering Semien a 7-year deal versus just either more money or whatever?
I mean, it all comes down to those different things, and I'll be curious to know when it's all said and done what that ask price is going to be. But obviously, from being comfortable, I would love it for be a 5-year deal, 6 years max, but I don't think that's what this is going
to
be.
To me, the length of the contract doesn't matter, because DePoto has shown that he's been able to get out of long contracts. Like, how did he get Jared Kelenic and Justin Dunn? He got out of the Cano contract with 5 years left on it. The length of the contract doesn't, like, if their window ends and Semien is still here for 3 more years, he's regressed. Like, I'm not worried about DePoto being able to get out of contract and be able to get some sort of future prospects for that.
Okay.
So to me, the length doesn't really matter. Unless it's 10 years.
But
then
But don't forget, he had to attach who to that deal?
Yeah, he did have to attach Edwin Diaz.
Exactly.
Yes. So, who's not been great with the Mets.
That is true. So you're 100% right on that. But you, in order to get offload a bad deal, you're going to have to get rid of a star player or a star piece. And if you're rolling and if you got a bunch of star players and that's hopefully the plan, then that's okay. That's fine. And so, DJ, to your point, Stacey, to your point, when you initially talked about money, you talk about years, that's where I'm at. Just get the deal done. I don't really care. Like, I don't care if you look at it and everybody else is saying, ooh, I don't know, that's a bad deal for the Mariners. I really don't care, because the impact years that Marcus Semien still has left are going to be key years for the Seattle Mariners in this process of turning themselves into a winner, and hopefully winning begets more winning.
Yeah, I wish that you had a more sure picture of what your youngest pieces would look like, because no matter what you do in free agency, you're not going to get enough in free agency to make a deep push into the playoffs if you don't also have returns on the guys you already have. Is JP going to be as good this year as he was with just getting on base, right? Mm-hmm. Is Mitch Haniger going to hit 30-plus home runs? 35-plus home runs? Is Jared Kelenic going to keep growing month over month? Like, all of those things have to matter, too.
Yeah, they do. And
I just wish we had a better picture.
It's all got to develop, but you don't know that picture right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you're going for it, you're going based off of what you saw last year and the uptick in a lot of these guys, and you're seeing their arrow point upward, and knowing that you got Julio Rodriguez coming up as well, who looks like, you know, again, a Wander Franco type of prospect, a guy like Vladimir Guerrero, a guy like Juan Soto, guys that, you know, have played those minor leagues and have absolutely crushed it. I mean, that's Julio Rodriguez's numbers right now. It's different than what Jared Kelenic's was. And that's not to say that Jared Kelenic won't be a great player, but the arrow is pointing up for the Mariners, and you have to be willing to take on these chances. And I would say that because you've limited the market in regards to, you know, shortstop, I mean, you have put yourself in a very, you know, precarious situation if Marcus Semien does slip through your fingers.
Tuesday, a new day and a new guest. Ty France took time out of wedding planning to visit with Mike Salk.
Good morning, Ty. How are we doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. How's the off season going for you?
It's been good. It's been busy. I'm getting married this off season, so finishing up the wedding planning, and then January, get married. So it's been
congratulations,
busy ride so far.
Big deal. Congratulations. Where are we getting married? Give me some details here.
Thank you. We're getting married in Pacific Palisades in California. Both of our families are from LA area, so central location down by the beach, and
I'm definitely looking forward to it.
I like it. Yeah, you're from what, West Covina, right? I kind of thought of you as a San Diego guy, I guess because you went to college down there, but you're from West Covina.
Yeah, yeah, I'm more, I grew up in West Covina, and then, like you said, went to college in San Diego.
So you go down to San Diego, you're a 34th round pick of the Padres. How do you get them to notice you as a 34th round pick?
To be honest, once I was drafted, I didn't really look at it like that. As just, you know, go out and play my game, and, you know, hopefully that speaks for itself. And, you know, I have to give them a lot of credit. They treated me like, you know, every other player. If you performed, they promoted you. If you didn't, they, you know, left you at the level you were at. So, you know, give a lot of credit to them. They treated me really well.
And what do they tell you off the bat? Just, hey, you got to hit. If you hit, you're gonna move up.
Honestly, they don't really tell you much. They kind of just want you to go out and be yourself, and you know, that's what I did.
You start off your minor league career in Tri-Cities, right? Not that far from here, Tri-Cities, Washington. How far did you feel from the big leagues on that first day when you show up there?
Pretty far. You know, you walk into the short season, all of the short season, you know, stadiums were not, you know, very nice. Most college places were nicer than them. But, you know, the fans in Tri-Cities were awesome, which was really cool. That was the first time I really played in front of fans like that. And so that gave it a sense of like, okay, you know, you're in pro ball now. But yeah, it's when you start thinking about it, you know, you're what, 5-6 levels away from the big leagues. Seems like it's going to take forever. And then, you know, 4 years later, there you are at Petco Park. So
yeah,
it was crazy.
Was there a moment along the way where you had a thought like, hey, I could do this, like I'm good enough, I can make the big leagues?
Yeah, you kind of have to carry that like little bit of swagger confidence with you the whole way. But it started to get more real once you get to like AA, AAA. That's when you're like, all right, you know, I'm knocking on the door here. This could happen.
Pretty cool. Talking to Ty France, obviously a great year this year for the Mariners. Is there a moment from this past season that you will remember the most?
To be honest, that whole like last week of the season when we played the A's and the Angels, that was a crazy homestand. You know, to be able to see T-Mobile packed with 40,000 plus, and then you know, giving Kyle Seager his send off, that was just pretty special.
It sure seemed like a special group. We talked to Paul Sewald a couple of weeks ago, and just listening to him talk about the way this group came together and the amount of fun that you guys had, it must have been just a different experience for you.
Yeah. You know, coming into the season, I think there was very little pressure on us because, you know, we weren't expected to do much this year. So we kind of just tried to make the best of it, and you know, it like you kind of mentioned, it turned into a fun group of guys having a good time out there and, you know, playing their best baseball and, you know, kind of shocked the world a little bit and, you know, had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about JP Crawford and his role in that. I mean, he's such an energizing looking person and just had a couple of experiences watching him this year from the stands and seeing, you know, I was close by one day. I saw him pop up to start an inning and I heard him go down into the tunnel and you could hear some of the frustration. And then it ended up being an inning where you guys rallied and saw him like immediately pop right back up. First guy out there to congratulate whoever it was that came up with the run scoring hit just a minute later. That ability to kind of be selfless and think about the team seems so special on a team like what you had this year.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, when I first came over here, I knew JP a little bit, but I always thought he was more like quiet, reserved to himself. And it's almost the exact opposite. He's all about the team, and you know, he's definitely a spark plug for this group we have. You know, he's our leadoff hitter. You know, we go and he goes. And kind of like you said, to be able to, you know, get upset for a moment and then just flush it, and you know, care about your team. That's what you want to see in a leader, and you know, it just shows he cares. You know, one, he wants to help as much as he can. That's why he gets frustrated when he doesn't. But to be able to just throw that away and go pull for the boys, you know, he's a special player on and off the field. He's a good dude off the field, and you know, I'm glad I'm on his side now.
Yeah, no kidding. I've heard you say, I think it was even on this station, I've heard you say that you like just talking to guys over at first base when they show up over there, whether Scott likes you to or not. What are you guys talking? I mean, what is it? Because you don't strike me as necessarily the most talkative guy. It's just a friendliness thing. What is it out there?
Yeah, it usually just starts with a, like, hey, what's up, man? And kind of get a read on if they're a talkative person or not. And if they are, you know, you meet a lot of guys in this game. And me personally, I like to hear guys' stories, you know, just where they're from, stuff like that. And, you know, you end up making a lot of friends in this game, which is, you know, a unique opportunity, especially being over at first base. You know, guys get to first a lot, so you get the chance to chop it up with them. And, you know, I like to have fun with it.
How many ball players are coming to this wedding here in a couple of weeks?
It's more of a family wedding. We didn't do too many. I think we have like five, maybe.
Okay. So yeah.
We both have big families, okay. So it'll be more family.
Who's the funniest guy you've met over there at first base as you're chatting with everybody?
To be honest, Jared Walsh. He's a character. He
from
likes
the Angels.
To talk a lot more than I do. but he's funny.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a good one. To be honest, I haven't met like one bad dude. You know, there are a handful of guys that, like, you know, they have to take the game really serious and lock in, which I can completely understand. And you know, I leave those guys alone. But for the most part, everyone likes to, you know, talk.
I mean, you wouldn't tell me if there was a bad guy, though, right? I mean, that's like an immediate fight that you've got to deal with next year. If you say that, all of a sudden, that's bulletin board material.
I mean, if they were a super, super bad guy, I wouldn't mind airing them out. But I haven't met one person where I'm like, dang, this guy sucks.
Why baseball for you? What got you into baseball above other sports? How'd you choose?
I played baseball, I want to say since I was like 2 years old. Just fell in love with it when I was a kid. Growing up, I was bigger than most kids, so I did fall in love with football. I played football 2 years of high school, and, you know, ended up picking baseball, which I'm very thankful I did. I walked on campus at San Diego State and saw the size of our football players. So I was like, dang, these guys are massive. These guys are huge. I can only imagine what Clemson or Alabama looks like. So very thankful I chose the baseball route.
What about this upcoming year, 2022, big year for you? What can you hope to accomplish this year? What can you improve on from last year? What are your goals?
Just consistency. You know, trying to basically repeat what I did last year. I felt like I had a really good year last year. And, you know, if I can knock out that 10-day IL window and just play 162 healthy, that's one of my main goals. And, you know, kind of try and be a spark plug for this team.
How about Jerry? Jerry DePoto's got a huge offseason ahead of him here. And you know, we've read Mitch Haniger's piece and sort of the idea of kind of pushing the team to take that next step, acquire the next couple of pieces. If Jerry comes to you tomorrow and says, hey, any advice? What should I be doing this offseason? What would you tell Jerry?
I'm pretty sure he's got that under control. But, you know, they make it sound like they're going to go out and spend big this off season, which, you know, I think is needed. And, you know, go grab a couple big time players, a couple veteran guys. And, you know, we're going to be in a good spot. You know, we're not really missing too much. You know, our bullpen's phenomenal. You know, majority of our lineup is really good. Our starters. So we just need a couple key pieces and, you know, it should be a good year for us next year.
Is there a personality type maybe that fits specifically on this team? Is there a type of personality he should be out there looking for?
Not really. No. I mean, there's tons of different personalities in that locker room and, you know, we all mesh pretty well. So, you know, I think, whoever they decide to go out and grab, will be a good fit.
What if he came to you and said, hey, I could use your help. There's a free agent out there. I think you know him, and maybe you could go talk to him for me and help sell him on what we're building in Seattle. What would be your sales pitch right now on what kind of a team you guys have going?
I think, you know, we last season what we did kind of spoke for itself. you know, we didn't have any, like, you know, wow players, and we won 90 games. So if we can get that wow player or a player or two, you know, who knows how far we'll be able to go. And, you know, we're an up-and-coming group. It's a lot of fun over here. We have a good time, and, you know, one to two key pieces could help us.
I love it. Ty, really appreciate it. Congratulations on just a great year. It's a lot of fun watching you guys in general and you specifically. Congratulations on the season. Congratulations on the upcoming wedding, and we'll look forward to spring training.
Sounds good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I think France may have coined a new term in that interview. Wow players. Absolutely love that. Ty France looking for one or two wow players to join them. Let's go ahead and jump to a podcast that just so happens to be my podcast. This week on Talking Mariners, Boy Howdy and I filled up an hour without a move to talk about. I think we've turned over just about every stone in regards to free agent acquisitions, and we've had some trade discussion, but this week I took a new look at something the Mariners could do.
I think Oakland, great trade partner there. And then, this is one that I really wonder about and something that we've really kind of overlooked. One of the hottest commodities on the trade market a year ago, and we're not hearing much about it right now, is the major league ready player, or the major league ready, or the major leaguer with lots of control left. And the Mariners have got two that I think are immensely tradable and perhaps in a package deal have significant value. And the first is, we don't know where they're playing Luis Torrens. We liked what he did as a DH last year. If there's a universal DH next year and we find that out after the CBA, that could help quite a bit. But that catching market is terrible.
It is. It's really thin. There are guys getting contracts that probably shouldn't be on major league rosters, but there's just nobody left. I mean, the fact that Manny Pena got a 2-year, $8 million deal, that's traditionally, until recently, that's like a back of the roster guy. That's real money for a guy who is like sometimes home runs and an average catcher. I don't know. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think there could be value there. And quite honestly, I was surprised that he wasn't traded last offseason. I thought that there would be value there. He hurt himself defensively, but that was the first year that he really stumbled defensively. So who knows? With this market the way it is and with what he's now doing with the bat, perhaps that is attractive. The other, you know, when they traded for Abraham Toro, the assumption at the time was they're flipping him right away. And I'm going to take Jerry DePoto at his word on this, but he said he got numerous calls, and I've actually heard this from others too, right after they made that deal about Abraham Toro. Is he attractive in that regard? You know, you need that team that needs to cut costs but needs to be competitive right now, and both of those players could be attractive there. You're probably also, if you're in this situation, going to have to get into trading one of your relievers.
I totally agree with you on that. It's a huge strength of not only the team, but the organization. And bullpens can be fickle, and there's no guarantee that next year's bullpen operates close to or the same as last year's bullpen. So I am right there with you. I think they're going to leverage some of their young bullpen arms to potentially bring back something that could be equally valuable in another aspect of the team. Yes.
And these are players... You know, Oakland, obviously, they're cutting. Why would they take on somebody who's already a major leaguer and is coming up on arbitration? Well, they can trade him then. They can flip those players as well. So that's one. Miami Marlins need catching. They've got some extra pitching right now. Put something together there.
I just don't know how much the industry will respect Luis Torrens as a catcher, and they'll look at him more as a slightly above average hitter who can play a position, and how much value there will be. But being involved in a package.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're throwing in some prospects there too.
Right.
Well, make no mistake about that, but not top 10 type prospects, I think, at that point, and certainly not multiple. But I think that is something that's worth it. We haven't really talked much about what else can you trade if you have to make these trades.
I think it's a great point. The other thing we haven't talked about is the traditional Jerry DePoto trade. It's not been on anybody's
radar. Getting an ex-Mariner? Somebody who's already traded away?
Trading a major league guy.
Come on down, Pablo Lopez.
Yeah, flipping a major league guy and a minor league guy for a major league guy and a minor league guy. Diversifying your assets. Mm-hmm. Can something be done like that with your bullpen? Can something be centered around a Taylor Trammell type and the Drew Steckenrider type and bring back a starting pitcher or a position player that you think is above average, a solid contributor that's not going to cost you too much money on the books and really be somebody who's here for three or four more years, I think that's a real strong possibility. I think it's a creative way that the Mariners can trade from depth and get something back that fills a huge hole.
And you're doing something like that. However, you're not getting that big impact. You're getting something to hold a spot down. You're getting something to be probably closer to replacement than what we're talking about if you're doing a bigger deal for somebody.
Yeah, a 1 to 2 war player. You're not talking about right. a 4 to 6 war player in that.
Right.
But a 1 to 2 war player that plays 140 games is valuable for this team.
Exactly, exactly. And then, of course, the big one, which DePoto acknowledged that he is open to, but also said it's a lot harder to do than people want to think, is taking on that extra contract.
I'm very interested in that as a way to potentially get a star player without having to give up a major, major prospect. I mean, yes, it is complicated. The Mariners did it on the flip side when they gave Cano away. How do you see that being a realistic possibility for them this offseason?
Well, he himself, and he said, you know, and he was right when he said it. It's so easy to sit down and just map these things out, but neither team really wants to make that deal.
Right. Yeah, you're taking on something and giving something that you don't want to do.
Both sides.
Yeah.
So, I think that, but then you also will have clubs that, and again, this is where your collective bargaining agreement, which you're not going to see this deal until afterwards, because if there is a payroll floor, those deals are going to be a lot tougher to come by.
Absolutely, because there's going to be teams who need to bring those players on just to hit the floor. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
So the landscape right now, certainly not playing in their favor. We don't know what's going to happen there, which kind of, I think, is a good reason why they're focused on what they are focused right now, and that's the big fish.
That was from the Talking Mariners podcast, which can be found on the 710sports.com podcast page on the Hot Stove League page. Back to the airwaves we go. Wyman and Bob's weekly segment with MLB Network's John Morosi, who, among other topics, hit on what he believes it will take in terms of an offer from the Mariners to have a shot at landing Marcus Semien.
As we approach that deadline for baseball, hopefully the work stoppage, if it happens, will be short and sweet. But who would know better than that than our buddy, our pal, the one who's joining us right now, John Morosi, our NHL and MLB analyst. Hello, John.
Happy Thanksgiving, my friends. Great to be on the air with you today.
It's always great to be with you. We're gonna let bygones be bygones about the voting and move on.
Thank you. I thought that based on the way that last week's conversation went, that you were gonna bring me back on with Across the Field or Carmen, Ohio, or all matter of Ohio State songs as we get ready for Michigan, Ohio State here in Ann Arbor on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Right after we were on, I saw Godfather 2. And I heard the music playing, and then you know how that one did not end well for
that one does
Fredo,
not end
Fredo.
Well. Yes, there was a being a proud Italian American. There were any number of routes I could have taken when I heard that song and that reference. I chose none of them.
I simply
stayed with baseball and just proceeded to defend my entirely justifiable Manager of the Year ballot. And again, whenever I think the rest of my life, I'm going to, at some point in time, reference that dead last of the top three. That was just such a gem. I'm never going to forget that line. I'll reference it with Michigan. So let's say by some miracle, Michigan wins on Saturday and then wins the Big Ten championship and then is ranked fourth in the college football playoff. And as Ann Arbor erupts in joy, I'll say, no. We're dead last of the top four.
That's exactly
we're dead
right.
last of the top four. Never forget.
That's awesome. All right, and before we get into it, because we had some disagreement, and this is a very passionate topic, but what is the most important dish in the Thanksgiving dinner?
Oh, I mean,
Most important is how I'm wording it.
Most important.
Wouldn't that be the turkey?
Well, so traditionally, you've now asked me a question that's very easily a sort of an essay answer from me, but I'll say it this way. Traditionally, yes, it's turkey in most American Thanksgivings, but having grown up in a Polish-Italian family, as I referenced my Italian heritage earlier, my father's mom, first-generation Polish-American, and so we always had kielbasa as part of our Thanksgiving with importantly, schan, Schan is like a and you can look it up. I
how do you spell it?
Well, so there we go. So
well, if you don't spell it, you eat it.
Yeah, exactly.
But I can't look it up.
Schan, let me see here. It's Polish. It is like Polish horseradish. Let me make sure I get the correct spelling here because I don't. Let's see here. Schan. I'll figure it out by the time this segment is done.
I like that you keep repeating it, though, as if it's going to come to you.
Schan. It's really good. But you have to have. Oh, well, let's see here. It's on. Google Translate is something else that's not exactly correct. But I'll get back to you. At least that was what my grandmother always called it, was Khan. I'll tell you, like, the quickest Morosi travel story ever. 2 years ago, I'm in Warsaw, and my grandmother had always. We would always say Jak się masz, which is a way of saying hello, but we always said it in our family. And I don't know Polish well enough to know if that's what you're supposed to say when you're actually in Poland. So. She didn't tell me that, you know, John, son, you only use that among the family. If you say Jak się masz, it's like saying to your friend, like buddy, very informal in a family, Jak się masz. So I'm in a restaurant in Warsaw with my cousins who still live over there a couple of years ago. And I say to the waitress, dzień dobry, yeah, Jak się masz. And my cousins look at me like, what are you doing? You can't say that to her. You just met her. It should be Jak się pani ma, if you're going to do it properly. They were like, everybody was totally flabbergasted and like taken aback, almost offended. I'm like, guys, I'm just doing what grandma always told me to do. And on days like Thanksgiving, my late grandmother always said, Janusz, eat your schan. So I gotta, I have to find exactly how you spell that because I have to get this right on the air. Schan.
Well, somebody is texting in. I don't. Maybe they're guessing, but they Chrzan.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Yep.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Schan. There you go. The 425. Nice job by them. I had an easy answer, and it's just gravy. I mean, to me,
yeah, it is. It's
gravy's
it's
the most important.
Yes, Chrzan. There you go. So
it is gravy. Okay. Nice job, 425.
There you go. According to thespruceeats.com, it's the sentence begins, Chan, made from horseradish root and vinegar. There it is. Chrzan. We all know something
but
new now.
Can you say gravy's the most important dish? It's not really.
Gravy is
you're not
really,
eating it by itself. It's not
the most
dish.
Important element.
Gravy is
element.
Crucial.
Okay.
But obviously, as we're talking about this, you could either take the classic American gravy or combine the horseradish root and vinegar, and then you get schan, which I would say superior to the standard gravy. Who needs that? Schan.
All right. Now,
Morosi, stop saying schan.
There you go. There you go.
With such emphasis and such passion. I love it.
I love his enunciation. Everything, like when you say Berrios.
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 Yeah.
You got it. Hey, well, speaking of baseball, let me transition to this because we saw a very – I'm wondering if we're going to see this more often. We saw this massive deal for Wander Franco.
Yes.
A massive deal for a guy that's played, what did he play, 70 games? 70
right.
Major League games.
Half a season.
20 years old. He was by far and away their top prospect. He was the top prospect in all baseball. Am I correct on that?
Yes. Yeah. Number one, unquestionably.
A deal that's a 12-year contract that guarantees him, and this is the part I wanted to ask you about. It says, this is the ESPN story, around $185 million. The deal is worth a maximum of 223. What is that? I'm assuming that's an option if
correct.
A team
there's
option or a player option
correct.
Gets picked
there's,
up.
There's a team option with some conditions on it for the 12th year. But when you think about that, 11 guaranteed years, team option for the 12th. I mean, we're now well into the next decade. That's almost incomprehensible. The future of when Wander Franco's contract is over, what will the baseball world look like? It's really
well. This will be a bargain, right?
Well, exactly. And I do think. We all understand that a week from tonight, tomorrow, there's the deadline here coming up for MLB with respect to the CBA. And I do think if you've got a deal to work on, if you've got a player that you believe in, and you're not sure what the rules are going to be, if there is a work stoppage, hey, get it done now. And especially with Franco, I'll tell you this, being around him during the playoffs, what a player. And he wants to be great. I really enjoyed. I had a couple conversations with him. Curious. He reminds me. He has some traits that are in common with a Juan Soto in terms of that just incredible talent plus love for the game plus aptitude to get better. I mean, he was having some truly professional at bats in huge moments at Fenway Park in the playoffs. That's special. And so for me, you do wonder. what do contracts look like if a Kelnick becomes the player that the Mariners hope he's going to be, if a Julio Rodriguez becomes the player the Mariners hope he's going to be. It is interesting that there will be some conversations along these lines that would likely dwarf the contracts that were handed out to Evan White, for example. It's just a fundamentally different conversation when you're already at the major league level and performing, which is why, to me, Kelnick is just such an interesting guy to watch play here in 2022 and beyond.
Hey, JP, if you are, you kind of touched on it, but if you're an agent with this deadline looming here, what would be your, what's your sense that you get? Do you think you could create some urgency and maybe get a little bit more money than you might later? Or what would be your advice to a player?
Yeah, I do think, David, it's certainly a possibility. And we're already seeing it now with some deals happening here. Steven Matz in the last 24 hours, Eduardo Rodriguez, his deal, the extension for Berrios, others. I mean, there's a lot. Noah Syndergaard, a one-year deal, obviously, for beyond what the QO was. I think especially among the pitchers, we are seeing movement. And John Gray, I had an agent tell me today he might be the next one to go. I do think Kevin Gausman, who the Mariners have been involved in, his name is out there. I would not surprise me at all if he signs in the next week. This is going to be, you know, it's so interesting, as you guys know, NFL free agency, NBA free agency, NHL free agency is quick. It happens fast because there's no salary cap for the most part, or because there is a salary cap there and we don't have one in baseball. And now I think we're almost dealing with a deadline that we rarely have. And all of a sudden things are starting to move, and it's pretty interesting to watch it unfold. So I do think that the deadline is there and is spurring a lot of activity, especially on the pitching front. What I don't know is if any of the big Boris clients will sign, especially among the position players. Seager, Semien, Chris Bryant. He's got three of the premier top five or six position players. I'm a little skeptical if any of those three are going to sign before next week.
What do you see? Make of the numbers I've seen attached to Semien, a guy that the Mariners are obviously interested in, amongst other teams, and a lot of fans are interested in him coming here. He's a guy that's 31 years old. We're not talking a 26, 27 year old. Not that he's finished by any stretch, but a 31 year old. And I saw that Boris is expecting north of $200 million for him. Do you look at that and say, well, that makes sense, or is that pie in the sky for a guy? I mean, obviously coming off a brilliant season, but
sure,
is that who he is moving forward? Well, or it seems like it's a bit of a risk for a guy that age, and you look at his history in the league, hasn't always been obviously what he produced last year.
Right. He's a really interesting case because on the field, off the field, tremendous value. He can play an up the middle position, so he can be a shortstop. He proved he could play second base, which is obviously where the Mariners would want him. I look at him as being somewhat similar to George Springer. Springer, up the middle player, center field, goes to the Blue Jays, and his contract, about the same age that Marcus is right now, was 6 for $150 million. And so that means it's exactly at that $25 million a year range. I think that's what Marcus is probably going to try to hit. And then the question becomes, can you go 25 times 7? That would get you to 175, which is obviously way more than the one-year deal he took to go to Toronto. So, I mean, I think that's – if he gets – I would have a hard time if I was Marcus Semien, if somebody offered me 7 years for 175 – I would have a hard time saying that's way too low. I think ultimately, if you're at 7 and 175 for Semien, I believe you're going to be part of the final conversation. If he gets 8, I would be a little surprised, not totally flabbergasted, but I do think if you're at 7 years with him for a middle of the infield player, you almost never see middle of the diamond infielders giving you good value at the age of 37, 38. This is like Derek Jeter type later career Jeter years.
Yeah.
I think that for Semien, if you go 7 for $175 million, if you're comfortable at that level, I think you're going to be, if you don't get the player, you're going to be at least one of the finalists if you're at that level.
JP, we have Chris Flexen on at 5:45 today, and
nice.
Just yeah, and he like Bob said, just by far the most solid. But as far as his performance there, I mean, I always worry about pitchers year to year. We talk about bullpen from year to year. Sometimes you have the same guys, but it gets worse. But what you saw out of Chris Flexen last year, do you think that this is him? This is sustainable. This is the pitcher that he is.
I think it is because he's someone that really doesn't walk a lot of guys. Obviously, he's done a very good job of controlling his strikeouts to walk ratio to get it to a very good spot. He's someone that does to a degree because he doesn't strike out a ton of guys. He does depend on his defense to an extent, but he's lucky that the Mariners are a very good defensive club. So I think from that perspective, all of it is sustainable. What I'd be curious to learn about from him, and I think it's important, you look at what he did pitching in Korea in 2020 for Doosan, he still pitched 116 innings there. And so he had something that was much closer to a full season than a lot of the MLB pitchers had in 2020 because Korea played longer. They began their year earlier than we were able to here in the States. So I wonder with him getting to a career high in innings at 179 and two-thirds this year, I'd be curious to know how he has sort of made sense of the varying roles here, where in 2019 he was mostly a AAA starter, then he signs to go to Korea. The pandemic obviously affected everything. I would just be curious to hear from him what his offseason is like now and how he's responding to a career high in innings by a pretty good margin. You look back to the minor leagues, I think the only other time he was over 100 innings was back in 2016 in St. Lucie. So career high in innings. What is it about the Mariners and the way they manage their workloads that made it work for him? And how does he make sure that going forward, it's a similar level of success coming off a career high in innings? I think it's, but you're right. In terms of the pitch making, I think he is someone that doesn't overwhelm you, but has excellent command, moves the ball around really well, really well-developed secondary stuff, breaking ball, changeup. I think he just had a tremendous year for the Mariners in 2021.
You know, a guy that we just saw sign a three-year, $24 million deal was reliever Kendall Graveman, who was obviously here with the Mariners, and he was lights out with the Mariners, and nobody wanted to see him leave. But, you know, I was telling Dave, you know, and we've talked about this, bullpen is one of the most, you know, confounding things in baseball to me because all of the same guys can dominate one year. You bring back that same cast, and all of a sudden everybody's lighting them up for whatever reason. It's really inconsistent. So I'm always sort of loath to really invest in bullpen arms. Three years, $24 million.
Yeah.
I like Graveman. I would have loved if he would have come back to Seattle. I'm not mad that the Mariners weren't in on that. That seems extreme for a guy that's not the pitcher. Who he was this year, John, is not who he's been through his career if you look at his numbers. So you're sort of betting that this is who he is moving forward at 31 years old. What'd you think of that signing?
No, it's a great call, and the White Sox are a sort of a unique team. I mean, they already have Hendricks there. The plan is to trade Kimbrel. You almost never see clubs over-leveraging late-inning relievers and having three of them on your roster at one time, much less maybe two, but it's a very rare approach given where they're at right now. And I think that it really does affirm – as much criticism as the Mariners took when they traded Graveman, if you weren't going to afford him for the long term and you weren't going to bring him back and you felt like you had some internal guys that could have those roles, when you look at how well Sadler pitched, of course, and Steckenrider was able to close games and Sewald was as well, they were able to make it work. And I think that you have to give him some credit, Jerry DePoto, some credit for making the deal when they did, because all of a sudden Toro's a pretty big part of the club in 2022 and beyond, and gives them flexibility to pursue someone like Semien and then swing Toro around to play third base. It's a good trade. And I think that this is where, and I love what MLB and the union did with respect to moving the tender deadline up a couple days so that way they can do some business before December 1st. What that means is that for the arbitration eligible players, you have to tender them contracts by basically early next week to give everybody time to sign a contract before a potential work stoppage. And what that does is if you really trust your pro scouts, and that's where guys like Steckenrider, Sewald, Sadler, they all came from other places. And the Mariners had to really get some good scouting information, good analytics, and make the right choices where they bought low on a bunch of stocks, so to speak, and then watched them grow and improve. And I think you have two choices. You either pay the going rate for Kendall Graveman, or you do a really good job on R&D and scouting to make sure that you make the right recommendations on guys like Steckenrider. And now you look at him, and he may well be the Mariners' closer in 2022.
Good stuff from John Morosi and a good baseball talk day in general for Wyman and Bob as Chris Flexen joined them a little bit later in the show.
Well, we're all wondering what the Mariners are going to do in the offseason, how they're going to make this team even better than they were last year. But one of the things you feel really good about coming out of last season, and there are a lot of things, Dave, that you feel good about. But this guy, the guy, we probably knew the least about him in Paul Sewald. And they turned into two of the best additions to this team. And I said it all last season during the year that Chris Flexen was far and away the most consistent pitcher in that entire rotation from beginning to end. We knew the least about him to begin the year, and by the end of the year, we were thanking God for him. And he's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Chris, how are you, man?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. Have you had a chance to kind of reflect on the season now? You're obviously a few weeks removed, to say the least, and now you can kind of take some pride and some joy in how things went for you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, after a long season like that, fun season as well. But, yeah, you're able to kind of step back for a minute and really be able to reflect on how the season really was.
Hey, Chris, explain kind of how it clicked for you. And, you know, we were watching in spring training and, you know, there was kind of some ups and downs and things like that. But for you, like Bob said, you're so unbelievably consistent. And tell us, what was different, and could you actually feel it when you get into like a groove and a flow that you're just pitching really well?
Yeah, you could definitely feel when you're in the flow moments. You know, I had a handful of stretches that I thought I was in those, but on an overall basis, I think the biggest thing for me was, you know, true trust and true confidence, and you know, the work that we did amongst each other with teammates and stuff, and as well as our pitching coaches, you know, the defense behind us, our catchers. I mean, everything goes into that. And, you know, that's all something that as a collective group, like, you know, that was one of the biggest things that helped me be consistent as well. But, you know, still came down to, you know, changing that confident mindset.
Hey, tell me about your individual confidence as it went through the season. I mean, from the beginning of the season, you come over from the Korean Baseball League again, you know, to most fans, unknown. We don't know what to expect. Is he, you know, is he going to be great? Is he going to be just a spot holder eating up innings, what have you? So there wasn't the expectation, I guess, from a fan base from that perspective. But I'm just wondering how different your mindset was at the beginning versus the end of the season, where it looked like you just went out there and expected, I'm going to win and I'm going to dominate. Because that's, as fans, I can tell you, every time we saw, all right, what's the matchup today? Oh, Flexen? All right, I like our chances. It was just an expectation that you were going to go out there and at the very least, even if you didn't have your A stuff, keep the team in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like I said, that time that came down to the confidence thing. And, you know, every day from the beginning to the end was trying to get better and how can I adjust? How can I be better? And, you know, continuing to put in the work day in and day out and trying to make every start. And, you know, it really came down to really competing for the team. And that was my biggest mindset every time.
On the stretch, it was really exciting. And just tell us what it was like from the inside, because for Mariner fans, you know, what did you, was it 14? You had 13 out of 14 or 12 out of 14 down the stretch. I mean, you guys were just as hot as can be, that streak you had. What was that like inside the clubhouse?
It was awesome. You know, I felt like we had, you know, pretty strong support throughout the whole year. You know, but definitely down that stretch was a lot different, you know, to be able to have, you know, 40,000 plus fans in that stadium and the noise level that it brought for us. I mean, it was really exciting. And, you know, we were hungry to compete for that spot down the stretch. You know, I know we fell a little short and left a bad taste in our mouth, but, you know, we loved that support and it made it a lot of fun to play behind those fans as well.
Well, I can tell you, you re-energized a fan base out here that's, you know, for good reason, been cynical and sort of, you know, oh, yeah, Mariners, I'm not counting on it. I mean, it's been two decades since the postseason. So people just kind of go into the season with the expectation of being disappointed. And that was so much fun for the fans to be excited to go home. Oh, Mariners are playing tonight. Couldn't wait to be in front of the TV. And there was, you just gave people a reason to be optimistic and excited. I'm curious, just from your physical perspective, you know, we all talked about your weight loss and all of that, but just innings pitched. You threw 179 and two-thirds last year, which was obviously by far and away more than you'd ever thrown at this level. I'm not sure what you did in the Korean Baseball League, but just it physically, how did you feel after throwing that many innings, more than you ever had in your big league career?
Yeah, I think Korea, I had a two-month break in the middle of the season. I think I got up to about 145. So for me to get to 179 was a huge milestone, you know, to be able to make all my starts. And physically down the stretch, you know, longevity-wise, I was, of course, exhausted. But, you know, down the stretch playing behind those fans with that much energy, you know, you really are able to dig deep and, you know, still continue to step on the gas. And, you know, I feel like I still had some stuff left in the tank and was really ready for that little playoff push that we were going to hope to make. And, you know, overall, I still felt pretty strong.
Hey, going into a season as a pitcher, Chris, do you are there times where do you have pitches, certain pitches that develop and progress and get better or worse and that you kind of ditch, or do you pretty much keep the same thing? Does that change? How much does that change as you go through a season, each individual pitch?
You're always trying to be as consistent as you can be. One of the biggest changes I've made into this year was kind of changing my slider into a cutter. And, you know, our pitching coaches kind of helped me, you know, figure out a good usage for my secondary pitches as well. And, you know, and then you're just trying to be as consistent as you can with that. So, you know, for me going into this season, you know, I'll continue to keep the same arsenal, figure out how to be able to command those pitches better and continue to make them, you know, as consistent as I can have them.
So did you watch the playoffs in the World Series? Or are you somebody that, hey, I can't watch it, we should be there, I'm not going to watch it? Or did you sit back and go, okay, this is what it's going to look like when we're in there next year?
Yeah, I watched every game, but yeah, I threw them on at times. And, you know, it's still a fan of baseball, and it definitely is a bittersweet to be able to watch the playoffs with the intentions that we, you know, we had hoped that we were in that mix, but, you know, still was able to watch it as a fan and, you know, watch the other guys compete.
Chris, where do you make your off season home? Are you moving here to Seattle? What you been doing with your off season so far?
I'm actually in Port St. Lucie, Florida. I got some family out here that has moved out from California, and, for me, just kind of, you know, the first few weeks was kind of relaxed, be able to reflect a little bit, get back into, you know, off-season life a little bit. And I think I took about 2 weeks off from the season and got right back in the gym and started training to get my body ready for this coming year. And, you know, we got Thanksgiving coming up, so just trying to, you know, slow things down, enjoy some time with family, because come December 1st is when, you know, things start kicking into gear a little more for me. And, you know, and then it's right around the corner for spring training, and, you know, then we're ready to go.
Is there any specific pitch or specific mechanical thing you're looking to work on in the offseason? You go back, watch tape, and say, oh, man, I really want to work on my slider. I want to develop this pitch. Is there sort of a box you need to check in the offseason going into next year?
I think just coming in strong, healthy, ready to go is one of the biggest things. I don't think there's any specific pitch that – you know, I need to reinvent or anything. And like I said before, it comes down to consistency. And for me, it comes down to location. So that's, you know, just getting armed and strong and in shape, ready to go, and be able to fine tune that come spring training and, you know, make your adjustments from there as we go.
All right. Before we let you go, Thanksgiving, what dish outside of turkey, what do you look forward to most?
Oh, I'm pretty boring with that. I'm actually just a big turkey, mashed potatoes, and probably some roasted broccoli for me. That's all I really stick to.
Okay.
No gravy for you, Chris.
Not a big fan of gravy, actually.
Wow. Now,
yeah,
now
I'm boring and basic.
Now, are you a portion control guy, or are you going to go multiple serving? Are you going to go back to the well a couple of times, or how does that work for you?
This will probably be my splurge meal. So yeah, I'll definitely have to go back to the well, but, you know, I've in the past being a little overweight, you know, that was, one of my biggest struggles was that portion control. So I'll definitely try to monitor that, but, you know, it's Thanksgiving, you're with family, it's time to celebrate a little bit. So I'll definitely be going back for seconds.
There you go.
Well, Chris, it's, good to talk to you again. We obviously enjoyed talking to you during the season and more so watching you pitch. What a tremendous year. So congrats on the year that you had. Enjoy the off season. Happy Thanksgiving to you and happy holidays, and can't wait to see you next season.
Awesome. I appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks again so much.
Thanks, Chris.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys as well.
I can't wait to see him back on the hill next season. Truly one of the more under-heralded signings of last offseason. One last check-in with the shows. Jake and Stacy, before they signed off for the holiday, gave us a wish list.
When we are back here on Monday, stuffed from eating leftovers for like a fourth day in a row, what are you hoping we will have seen?
What am I hoping we've seen? Okay, I'll start it off. Mariners actually make a move. That we are going to see Marcus Semien. We're going to signed maybe. We're going to see a trade of some kind. Maybe Kevin Gausman is signed. I don't know. But I want to see the Mariners make a move. They, I mean, what? We're approaching, it's 7 days away from this thing getting shut down and from free agency getting shut down until the collective bargaining agreement is agreed upon in Major League Baseball. So you've got 7 days to make something happen. I think there's going to be a big push, you know, with some of these players and some of these key names and stars, and we'll see if the Mariners are a part of that. But I do think that over the weekend, you could see some action.
Question: will any move suffice? For instance, what if they just sign Tyler Anderson back?
I'd be happy.
Okay. Yeah, so you're saying, you know what? Something. I just want to see some traction.
I want to see some. Yeah, I want to see some movement. I want to see something happen. Just give us something,
right.
Please.
Just work at some of the plate. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be everything. You don't have to clear it. Just start working away at some of it.
So the good news is Jake can finally exhale. Saturday morning, the news broke that Jerry Dipoto had swung a deal for Padres second baseman Adam Frazier. An interesting trade for a player who's 30 years old, fills a position I think most are hoping would be filled by one of the marquee names on the market, and has just 1 year of club control remaining. All that said, he is very much a Jerry Dipoto player. Control the zone, one of the best contact rates in baseball, positional flexibility. And as we would learn in the media session Saturday morning, a key puzzle piece that perhaps could lead to more before the lockout. I'll leave you with the audio from that session with Jerry Dipoto. Jerry, how did this all come together?
Over time. You know, this actually dates back to the mid-season last year. You know, we thought we were at the goal line to acquire Adam at the trade deadline last year. Obviously, we missed out, and we stayed in touch with the Padres as we head into the offseason, knowing that they had a pretty robust roster, and we just liked the player. So we stuck with it, and, you know, through the GM meetings in San Diego and until, you know, yesterday when we finally were able to agree on players and push it across and get into medicals, which led us to calling the players this morning and finishing it off. So a player who's been on our radar for quite some time.
Jerry, this seems to be a guy that checks off a lot of boxes for the things that you guys like. Controlling the zone, doesn't strike out a lot. Good bat to ball skills. Maybe not a ton of hard hit average, but it just seems like this is a guy, maybe like JP in a sense, who just gets a ton of hits. Can you talk about him as an offensive player and what you really like about him?
Yeah, I think Adam, to me, is one of the better strike zone managers in baseball. You know, he's got great contact skill. He, in an era where strikeouts are prevalent, he doesn't strike out. And his strikeout rates would be good in any era, really. He uses the field. He makes contact. He draws about an average-ish walk rate. And, you know, that combination of events with the ability to hit for a high average, which he's generally done as a major league player, results in significant on-base skills. And, you know, if you take Adams on-base skills and you take, you know, Ty France's on-base skills, we've talked about the consistent growth we've seen in JP and his ability to get on base. And you keep, you know, putting players out there on the base paths. Toro is another who's got great bat to ball skill and does get on base. You know, that gives players like Mitch, like Jared Kelnick, the like Kyle Lewis, the ability to go clean it up, and the more traffic we can create, the better.
Jerry, defensively, where does he project? Do you view him as a second baseman going into the season, or is he, because of his versatility, is he going to play around in a number of different spots?
It's a little bit of both of those. You know, I spoke with Adam this morning and, you know, asked him what his comfort level was in moving around the field. And his answer was perfect. It's whatever the team needs me to do. So we will view him, as the roster stands today, we're going to view him as our second baseman, but we also believe that there are a lot of opportunities to move him into left field and maximize the handedness matchups that we might be able to achieve. You know, there might be opportunity, for instance, you're facing tough righties. Abraham Toro can play second base and Adam Frazier can slide out to left field. And now you've got both bats in the lineup. And I will say one of the real appealing parts of this is with guys like Ty France and Abraham Toro and now Adam Frazier, Dylan Moore, the versatility that these guys have allows us to do so much in creative lineup building and doesn't stop us from continuing to go out and search for, you know, that kind of bat impact that we're trying to find in this market.
Jerry, kind of interesting in that he has got 1 year left on his contract. Why was that a fit for you right now?
Well, I wish he would add more, actually. I wish it was last summer and we had a year and a half or the summer before and it was 2.5. But, you know, we just feel like he's a perfect fit for our lineup. You know, we talked about going into this offseason with the hope of adding impact to the middle of our lineup and creating more length to our lineup. And I think Adam Frazier answers the length to the lineup riddle. He just makes us a better, more complete team. I believe that he can hit at the top of the lineup. He can move the lineup from roughly any position. He can play second. He can touch third. He's played both left and right. And yeah, that just gives us so much flexibility with what we do with the other players. You know, and frankly, as we sit here and work our way through the free agent market or the potential for trade, you know, we felt like adding Adam made us a deeper team without stopping us from doing anything else we would have wanted to do, which is, that's double the fun. We can continue to add to our team because Adam is so versatile.
Jerry, I know you tried to acquire him at the trade deadline, but when did he really get on your scouts' radars? When did you really start to have an interest in him, a 30-year-old veteran? When did you guys really start to target this guy?
Oh, probably 2016 or 17. honestly, he's one of those players. And these, you know, like when we talked this summer about Abraham Toro or like we've talked in the past about Ty France, we usually start with this type of skill set. We usually gravitate toward this type of player pretty early in their careers. And, you know, when Adam graduated to the big leagues with the Pirates back in 16, it was pretty evident that he did the things that we really value. And, you know, these are players, you know, Adam Frazier he played on an all-star team last year. He was a 4-win player and an F-war. And he does the things that winning teams value. And, you know, as a result, when you swing around the TV, you're surfing the channels in the postseason, there's a lot of Adam Frazier's that are playing in the postseason. And for a reason, they do all the little things. And Adam really hits that. He's a smart player. He has great acumen for the game. He has instincts. And you know, if you can line that up with the ability to play multiple positions and excel at multiple positions, he's a very good defender at second base. And we feel like that gives us a more complete roster than we had yesterday, which was the goal.
And Jerry, I know that you talked about at the GM meetings, you're going to be business as usual, do what you do. Have you been able to do that given the market and what you're seeing, or is it different than you expected going into the CBA deadline?
My thought on where we are at this stage in the offseason is that this month has been a bit of a rush. It's been fun where the activity in discussing trades with other teams, the interaction and meeting with free agents. You know, we had planned to sit down with 3 or 4. That number has doubled in short order. And with the, you know, we were broken up by the holiday, but otherwise we've had at least one meeting every day for just about the last week and are set up to do the same, you know, headed into this week. So, I love the pace right now. It's been a blast. Obviously the free agent pitching is moving at a pretty quick clip. And, you know, that makes, you know, for this is typically a time of year where you see a number of, the higher profile relievers coming off the board, but you know, especially the last 10 days, it's been really fun to watch. You can't help but enjoy it as a baseball person or fan.
You think the next 4 days are going to be even more chaotic?
I wouldn't call it chaotic. It's just fun, you know, and, you know, we're open ears, and it's, we're going to continue to try to push and add players. And mostly that's because there seems to be a sense of urgency in the industry. And we want to make sure that we are on that same wavelength.
So the reason your number has doubled has been because there does appear to be more activity right now, that they do want to get signed before the before something happens?
Yeah, you know, and we had talked about that. That's as the, I don't necessarily think we're viewing it as a deadline, but we had personally, the Mariners, we had talked about the idea of identifying how we were going to fill those, you know, the position player spots. And, you know, once we were able to connect with, and it appeared we were going to be able to acquire Adam Frazier, we were able to start, you know, spreading our wings in different places. Because that meant that was one player we weren't going to have to go to the free agent market. So this was more of a fixed cost for us. You know, we generally, while we don't have a specific number, we generally know what Adam Frazier's rate of pay is going to be, which allowed us to then go and better assess, you know, how far our dollars could go in the free agent market, you know, which resulted in us reaching out and connecting with our top pitching targets. So, you know, that is more of what doubled our meeting sessions. So, you know, we've had a chance to get in front of a lot of different players, had a chance to visit with players and their wives, and, you know, some live, some via Zoom. And it's been really refreshing, actually, after a positive season, we're getting very positive feedback.
Has this progressed to the point where you have offers on the table?
We do. We have, you know, two offers on the table. One that I would say is notable.